number two of Darren and Donnick here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Kayla Anderson, News 2 alongside here in Bridgestone Arena. Jack Daniels Barrel House, 90s night here in Smashville. Predators and Leafs, 7 o'clock puck drop off pregame for you starting at 6. So when you see this team as they are going into game 74 of the regular season, which means this thing is about to conclude and then you know what time it is.
Playoff
what
time.
Do you think through 73 games? What? How would you assess this team?
This team is it's given me a little bit of anxiety. I won't lie.
I don't think you're the only one.
The inconsistency, I think, has just been the thing that has not gone away and that I was hoping would go away in March. But at the same time, Darren, I feel like they still have the pieces to pull it together. And I think that road trip was huge. But I think that San Jose game was even bigger, considering the fact that that was a good Sharks team that they beat. And I firmly believe, you know, you can pull something from a game like that. And three in a row has not happened in a while. And hoping they can get that tonight and build off of it. Because they're going to need that momentum going into the playoffs, hands down. I'm not going to say anything more than that. They need that momentum going in.
So, did San Jose change anything for you at all?
Yeah.
I mean, that was a big win.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that to me was huge. Not only because it was a road win, but because it was the San Jose Sharks, and that team has been really playing really good hockey as of late. And I think that this Preds team could build some confidence off of that one. But again, they need to string together at least three in a row. Like two is not going to get it done. They got to start stringing some together here. This is a team that used to do that.
Well, I mean, I think everybody got spoiled by last year.
Yeah.
You know. It's not always going to look that way, and it's not always going to be that easy. Now, you know, I'm certainly not going to make excuses because now everybody's back and now it's time. And especially now, what does it mean with Austin Watson back in the fold? What does that mean? Is he going to play? Is he, you know, how are they going to ease him back? How is that going to work? But all the injuries, everybody is back for the most part. And so – now that everybody's been back, you can't really – look, I thought during the season it was incredibly unfair for a lot of people to, you know, question what was going on when it's like, well, what do you expect? Victor Arvidsson missed 24 games. I don't know if you've noticed, but he's pretty good.
He's really good.
He's got 31 goals in 49 games. That's kind of amazing, really. Mm-hmm. Philip Forsberg missed, 17 games. P.K. Subban missed 19 games. Kyle Turris missed 25 games. Oh, by the way, Austin Watson – who is their best penalty kill specialist and can do other things, as we know, has missed practically most of the season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've been decimated by injuries. And so I thought that was totally fair to understand that things were up and down, up and down. But now that everybody's back, and it can't happen magically, and they've made trades, and I think they've made good trades for the better, I think now everybody wants to see this thing start looking the way it's supposed to look if they're going to make a deep run in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think that these new guys are starting to finally sit in and settle in. And we've seen – what I've loved watching is just the addition of Brian Boyle. I love what he does. I love what he adds to that dressing room. But, you know, he's the big man that needs to get in front, and he's proven that that's his role, and he's been able to execute. So I've really liked the addition of Brian, and I think the more these guys are playing together, the better it's going to get. It never is an easy thing when you bring in new guys. You're not going to just snap your fingers and be like, oh, there we go. I mean, these guys have to settle in. So I think they're doing a nice job of it, and I hope that March doesn't run out quickly, and I think they will start to get it together here in the next couple of weeks.
Head coach Peter Laviolette said just now downstairs after morning skate, there's no playing schedule or game plan for Austin Watson as of now. Says he hasn't even seen him yet and invited the media to ask him again in a few days when he had a better idea. So
and
the team really had no – they released a statement yesterday, and it was you know, yeah. same thing that we've heard before, and they have no further comment, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is he is back, and there has to be some type of plan. I mean, what is the plan?
That's why I'm wondering, though, because there is, like, a little bit of stalling time. Like, are they just trying to figure out what's going to be best, or are they maybe saying we don't need his services? I mean, that's
he's on the roster, right. So they are saying.
Right.
I mean, they are saying they're going to do something with him. Mm-hmm. I just don't know what that is, and maybe they don't know
yeah.
to this point what that is. But at some point, they're going to have to talk about this.
Yeah.
Just releasing a statement and saying that we have no further comment is not going to work if Austin Watson is around. Like, at some point, you have to address that and say, okay, this is we're going to take it day by day, game by game, or whatever. But you have to make some type of comment.
Yeah, because the more that they don't, the more that people like you and
of
I
course,
are going to –
Of course. It's just the questions will get yeah. louder and louder and louder. So, you know, hiding behind a statement and saying no further comment is not going to make things go away.
Yeah, you got to address it, especially right now at this time of the year.
And so I don't know what the answer is. I don't know, and I don't know where – You know, here's the deal. It's a good problem to have
mm-hmm.
because right now you have real depth, but you keep putting people in the lineup. Now, they traded away two guys, so that helped the situation in Kevin Fiala and
Ryan.
Yeah, and yeah. Ryan Hartman. So that helped. But, you know, at some point, people have to come out. So if you insert him in, then who's coming out?
Exactly.
I mean, you're not taking out Boyle.
No.
Right? Do you take out Grimaldi?
He's been a motor.
Has he not earned his playing time? So, okay, who comes out? I mean, are you going to just make Kyle Turris a healthy scratch? Is that what he's going to be? He's been a healthy scratch for the last two games. I can't imagine that's going to be, you know, he's probably going to come back on this homestand, I would believe. At least that's what I said yesterday and on Friday. I did not feel that he was going to play in San Jose. I kind of felt like they would put him back in the lineup here on this homestand. Maybe they don't. I don't know. But it's not like Kyle Turris is just going to disappear. He's in the plans.
Yeah, they're paying him a lot of
paying
money.
Paying him $6 million a year. So, you know, that's what's interesting to me is if he's back in, then where is he in?
Yeah, no, that's the thing, though. Maybe that's the type of stuff they're trying to figure out right now. I mean, does he just be there as a teammate, you know, at this point? They've got some things to figure out, but at some point soon, they've got to address that.
No doubt about it. And I think this little patch of games
mm-hmm.
is going to be a real determining factor on how the fan base feels, right? How yeah. everybody feels about this team.
Two big ones coming up.
Well, I mean, this and then what's Saturday? In Winnipeg.
Yeah, in Winnipeg,
and then
yeah.
you're in Minnesota. I mean, it's just – so you've got these games where they're going to be huge games, and I think this week in particular is going to go a long ways with how everybody in this market feels about this team because, let's be honest, three wins or let's say 5 of 6 points after just coming off two wins in California – he's going to have everybody feeling really good.
Absolutely.
Get swept or come away with, let's say, a point mm-hmm. or a couple points in those six possible points, then you have everybody back to the uneasy feeling
and
that you said at the beginning.
Yeah, and we don't want that going into playoffs because you remember last year, I mean, this team was so dominant throughout the whole season, obviously winning the President's Trophy, but – remember that first series in Colorado? Like, you just kind of felt like something wasn't there.
Of course.
Right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We want to feel like it's there going into this first round of playoffs.
You felt it 2 years ago, but the expectations were really low. And so it was like a rocket ship. The
yeah.
explosion of, wow, look at what they're doing. And, you know, everybody fed off the team's confidence in the way they were playing. Obviously, they need to try to recreate that this year. And because you're right, it was really uneasy from the mm-hmm. from the get-go, and I realized they lost in 7, but it never felt totally right
Mm-mm.
in the playoffs last year. It just there were things off the whole time.
Yeah, they
even
always,
though they won a round and they went
right.
7,
they always felt like whenever we talked to them, it was always like they're like, we're going to address this, we're going to figure this out, but it just never ended up doing that. So and my other question is like, are these guys having fun right now? like, are they having fun out there? Like, sometimes I get the vibe, like, it's just so much in their head, like, let's go have some fun out there, guys.
Yeah.
Like, let's play like a team that's just enjoying it.
Well, there's real pressure. And,
yeah,
you know,
is.
Everybody doesn't react the same to pressure. Everybody thinks it's like that's what's intriguing to me about the Browns. Like, they have, believe it or not, real pressure. Like,
yeah.
That sounds ridiculous. But now they're the sexy pick. So how do they handle being a sexy pick? Like, before, it's been like, whatever happens, no, there are no expectations.
Right.
Your expectations are you're the butt of every joke.
Mm-hmm.
You're the doormat. So there are no expectations. Now there's real expectations. How do they handle that? And so there's real expectations here. How do they handle it? Kayla, thank you so much for
stopping by.
It was good to see you.
It was fun.
We'll do it again.
All right. Thanks, man.
Kayla Anderson, News 2. We'll come back with the general manager. Willie Donick will join us in the mix as well. The GM next. Predators host the Leafs. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick alongside. And David Poile in his 90s outfit. He's got his 90s get up here on radio. We'll just let you see it if you're in the building tonight. We're not going to tell you what it looks like. David, how you doing?
I don't know how my clothes have gone from decade to decade. I don't think I have any more bell bottoms left, though. So.
Yeah. Well, Pete and Terry said that their wardrobe essentially had not changed since the 90s, so they're just going to wear what they normally wear.
Okay, well, that's being honest.
Yeah.
Actually, Pete referenced that the other night in California. Pete said something about it, and Hal said, so you're just going to dress normal. In fact, I was surprised, David, when I asked you if you ever had, back in the day, the early days here, if you ever had a pager or a beeper. I think that's 90s, and you said no.
No. First time I ever had a cell phone, which was not a cell phone. It was a shoe phone. It was huge.
Yes.
It was like, if anybody remembers the TV show Get Smart.
Yes.
That's what it was. It was huge. This
you couldn't exactly stick it in your pocket.
Yeah, I've had smaller suitcases in this phone.
But did you have to pull out the antenna?
I think there was one, yeah. Just one thing on clothes and how things have gone through generations. When I first started, which is way back, like in the 70s, I guess, most of the players actually shopped at the same stores. And it was like a tailor-made clothes coming out of Montreal.
Hmm.
And they all had the same clothes. So you'd see team to team, and it was all, you know, big plaids, very loud suits, wide ties and all that. So I guess we've somewhat evolved from that.
So you could always tell on the streets
if there was
a hockey player.
Exactly. Right,
if there's a hockey team in town.
Exactly.
So I guess you feel a little bit better after the trip now that California trip has concluded?
Really feel good after the San Jose game. That was our best game in a long time. You know, as we've discussed on the show the last, few weeks here, it's just been some inconsistencies. But not that I want to compare us to anybody else, but I noticed in the last 10 games we've been .500, St. Louis has been .500, and Winnipeg has been .500, all teams that are trying to get to the first spot in our division. So, again, the games are tough. The games are important. It's so close in the standings. But I was really happy with how we played in San Jose. It just seemed like a much better team game, fewer mistakes. I think in a lot of games we're actually playing pretty good in large segments of the games, but we've made the big faux pas, if you will, and turned the game around, usually for the other team, which has been kind of unfortunate. And the other thing, like going back to the Anaheim game and several games before that, they got the first goal or two goals, and as our coach would say, we've been chasing the game a lot more than we should. Our MO has always been, to try to have that good first period and try to get the lead. And we've actually been very successful in doing that over the last few years. And at the beginning of the season, we're doing it all the time. And when we get the first goal, we seem to be a much better team. And we got that in San Jose, and that certainly was the difference in the game, in my opinion.
I said the last couple post games, David, and you tell me if I'm off with this or not. I said every winning team needs kind of those core guys, which are the guys that have the big contracts and, on your first line, what have you. And then I said everybody also needs those glue guys in a room. And I said, because we've obviously been talking a lot about this Colton Sissons, Craig Smith, and Yarncroak line, which have really exploded in the last couple of games. And I said Colton Sissons is kind of – he's one of those glue guys. I mean, I even referenced it. I said you can call him Elmers because whatever you guys need him to do, he does it, and he does it, and you get production out of him. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there's those type of guys that work real hard that everybody has, and like you're describing, Colton says, near Yarncroc. But when they produce, in addition to that, that's your Grand Slam home run or what have you. That's the difference in winning hockey games. I mean, Joey's line has played, you know, very, very well this year, and probably been our most consistent line of the year, and they've certainly produced the most. They did that the other night when we won, but, you know, difference is always a goal by the third or the fourth line, and, you know, we've got that for two games in a row from Colton Sijan, so that's really good news going into the playoffs. Colton has always played really well in the big games, played well in the playoffs, so, again, I see our lines starting to line up a little bit better right now with Lavi more or less committed to keeping the top line together and not experimenting anymore with that. Maybe this is a line now with Sijans and Yarny and Smitty. And I think whatever we do in our fourth line will be fine. So once again, we come back to the you know, where we are with the second line that's going to have to be spearheaded right now with Michael Granlin. And I think eventually and hope soon it would be with Kyle Turris.
You mentioned Colton Sijans. It's not the first time he's done big things, like you said. Certainly we all remember 2 years ago in the Western Conference Final against Anaheim, but just the whole – now he's had a career year in his points. The maturation of Colton Sijans, what have you seen from, you know, the last 2 to 3 years to this point where he is, where he's developed now?
I think it's a combination of us, you know, giving him the opportunity and him believing in himself. You know, I think players like that work really hard, they like to get rewarded from time to time, either in, you know, points. I think that really, really helps when you score a goal or, you know, get some points or you get moved up in the lineup. And, you know, Colton has benefited by his good play and hard work and some injuries along the way so that, you know, the coaches trust him in all situations. So he's become a very valuable player on our hockey club.
Yesterday you guys announced that Austin Watson is back in the fold with the team. I don't know what you can or can't comment on. I know you guys released a statement yesterday, but he is back with the team. What can you tell us on that front?
Well, I think it's probably less said the better. I mean, Austin's I met with him this morning, had a really good conversation with him, and you know all the things that have taken place and what he needs to do. Again, I'm pretty confident as where he is and what happened in the program. Right now our plans are he'll be at practice tomorrow, and we've got to find out what kind of shape he's in, and then whenever that is, 2, 3, 4 days, maybe there'd be an opportunity to go to Milwaukee, maybe there'd be the opportunity to play here. I think we have to go day by day just to see where he is to start with, but I'm, you know, based on the knowledge that I have of his treatment and the meeting with him this morning, I'm very optimistic that he could get back in our lineup before the end of this season.
Roster-wise, as a general manager, you can do anything at this point, right, because the trading deadline is passed?
Yeah, that's correct. So the roster is not a problem.
So you can have carry as much as
right.
you want, right?
Exactly.
Just glad to see that he's moving in the right direction from a personal standpoint for sure. David, you brought up Kyle Turris, and obviously – you know, watching Mikhail Granlin, we've got a chance now to see him for a few games. He's a guy that is very, very dynamic. But he's been playing with some different guys. You can see what the coaching staff is doing, trying to see what exactly the right combination is to have the right guys playing with him. But the good news is he looks like he's getting more and more acclimated to the team and the surroundings.
Yeah, I think so. But, again, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, we have to find chemistry on the second line. If, as I said earlier, Lavi's going to keep Forsberg, Johansson and Arvidsson together, then Granlin is going to land on the second line, and we need to get some production out of that line. It's as simple as that. If we can get some scoring on that line, I think we'll be a tough out for sure.
One of the things that has been discussed is Kyle Turris has sat for a couple of games. You just try. You see, they're trying to push the right buttons. This is always what the coaching staff is tasked to do. I'm sure on any team is get the best out of a player. And We know Kyle Turris is a good player. It looks like he's going to get a chance to get back in there tonight, and hopefully he'll move in the right direction here and get back to playing the way he's capable of.
Well, that's the hope. Again, it's, you know, there's always two sides to a story. There's the what we think of his play and what he thinks of his play. And, you know, I guess you'd probably realize that we probably don't totally agree 100%. If we agreed 100%, he'd probably be back in the lineup, and this would have never happened. So, you know, we've just got to keep working together. I mean, what you said is absolutely correct. Kyle is a really good player, And, you know, he's had some injuries this year. You know, whether he's been playing with the right people or if it's been any number of things, I mean, our expectations are a little bit higher than that, mostly from just production. I mean, we can and we do talk about a lot of different things, but to me, the thing that we need right now from Kyle is production. I mean, he's always been a sound player defensively, so if he's a plus player and he produces, that should get us back on the same page.
You've got a dynamic team coming in here tonight in Toronto Maple Leafs, just loaded with a lot of talent. It's been really interesting, some of their recent games, just real high scoring from just a fan's entertainment standpoint. It's been fun to watch. Not easy to defend, for sure, but the team did a really good job several weeks ago in Toronto holding them down, and that's not easy to do. But what goes through your mind when you see a team come out there like the Maple Leafs that could score seven on any particular night?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. In the side of me that's probably more of a fan, saying, you know, a 7-6 game would be okay as long as we get the seven.
As long as you get the seven, yeah.
But, you know, I think as we get closer to the playoffs, and we saw that against San Jose, you know, really good team and a good offensive team. We limited them pretty good in terms of their overall chances and scoring chances and a couple of goals against. So, you know, I think that's a better way for us to play. Having said that, not to be contradictory, I wouldn't mind seeing us, you know, score a few more goals. We haven't had, you know, we've been scoring okay, but I'd, you know, if our norm is three to win, if we could get four tonight, that'd be fantastic. I'd like to see a little bit more of that.
Last thing for you on my end, I noticed this with Wayne Simmonds. He dropped the gloves the other night against San Jose, but it seems like with Simmonds in there and Boyle in there and Cody McLeod's presence as well, there seems to be a different vibe. There's a little bit more menacing lineup, and I know that's one of the things that one element you wanted to bring to the team. The way, are you noticing a difference in the way the teams are playing you from that standpoint?
Yeah, I think so. And again, I think you said it exactly right. I mean, there's a big physical presence that we, you know, didn't have as much earlier in the year. I think that allows your top players to operate a little bit more comfortably out there. Probably gives you a little bit more space. I know from talking to the coaches, I think it helps their matchups. I've said before, you can't exactly pick your opponents in the playoffs, but it does appear that we're going to have to go through some bigger, more physical teams to have any success, either getting out of our division or getting out of our conference. So I'm happy with the play of the new guys, and I think that they were definitely needed for how we have to match up in the playoffs.
David, you're going to hear this come up again, and you're fresh off the GM meetings, and I was wondering if there was any discussions of this, because it's already being tossed around. Last year we talked about it with the two best teams in hockey in the same division. This team that's here tonight, they're going to play Boston in the first round. One of those two teams is going home in the first round. And you've got the three best teams in the Eastern Conference right there in the same division, which means only one of them can get to a conference final. So you'll hear that talk again. Do you think they have any – are they discussing maybe going back, or do you think this is what the league wants, kind of the rivalries?
I think that this is where we are for the next couple of years. I think when we get to 32 teams, I think that format allows you to have a little bit more change. In all my years in the league, there's never been a system that everybody thought was the right system.
Right.
I really think in the Western Division, where the distances – are so far apart versus the East, that we should really have the first two rounds within our division, versus if there's four teams that make the playoffs in each division. I mean, because you could get a situation, say, in the second round where, say, we're playing Vancouver in the second round, so there's a lot of travel and distance, et cetera, and say Chicago and St. Louis could be playing in the second round. Right there, you could make an argument that there would be a big advantage to the team who succeeds to go on to the third round. That really doesn't exist too much in the East side. So, I mean, which gets into more discussion. Do you have one system for one conference and another system for another conference? So I don't know the answer exactly. I would have time, you know, someday for having the ability to have Los Angeles and Anaheim play in the Stanley Cup Finals, or New York and the Islanders. But we're not set up that way right now. Our system is not bad, but, again, it gets a little out of whack on the in all fairness, I think, on our side just because of the travel.
All right, and finally, the most hard-hitting question you're going to get in this interview. You've been a GM for four decades, since it's 90s night. Your favorite decade is?
The 60s.
The 60s. That was pre-GM David Poile.
Which were the good old days.
60s night is coming up.
I was going to say, we'll get a 60s night here in Smashville soon. Good to see you. Thanks for doing this as always.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
Predators General Manager David Poile every week, brought to you by Gary Force Acura and Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. We'll come back with more of Darren and Donnick next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. My guess is Kayla Anderson, if she was still here, would get excited about this. She would be pumped.
I'll give you a 90s Predators flashback here. They used to do this thing, Darren, you remember this, the cool school field trip for a preseason game. You remember this? They would have all of the metro schools, all the area schools come in for a day game during school hours. It was like a 11 a.m. start or 12 noon, something like that. And they would play a preseason game. The place would be packed with, you know, 16,000 kids screaming. And they would play Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, all between whistles. And the kids, I would say probably 15% were actually watching the game. The rest of the people, they just couldn't wait to see what was the next video that was coming up on the Jumbotron, because it was all their favorite groups. Destiny's Child, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, just one after another after another. And they would just scream.
What is this video thing that you're talking about? Music video?
Music videos.
What?
They're
what,
still
what
there.
Is this
you don't turn on a channel to watch them anymore. Unless you have like deep cable, or direct TV. Like there is a channel or two where they show the classic videos.
Yeah,
there is one out there. You can still get them if you want. You got to really search though.
You got
kind of like
True
TV.
Yep.
You got to know where it is.
That's funny. That's good stuff.
Oh man, I'll tell you what. I've never heard the building that loud. With that pitch, the grade school, middle school kids, they were screaming. I don't know how the players even played. Pete and Terry would do the broadcast, and I don't know if I could even hear them on the headset down there.
Good stuff there from David Poile, who stopped by for his weekly visit, and of course every week that's presented by Gary Force Acura and Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. So tonight it's the Maple Leafs, and what did you think of what I asked? Because, I do agree with his answer of there is no perfect system, but this is coming. I mean, it's already out there. And Tampa is run away with this thing, okay? They are the best team in hockey, and they literally could sit everybody, call up their minors and play the rest of the year and still finish with the President's Trophy. But the two best teams after that in the Eastern Conference are Boston and this team that's here tonight. And so they're going to have to play each other in the first round, and somebody's out, the Bruins or the Leafs. Somebody is done after one round. And so you're going to hear all that, especially if it's Toronto up there in that market. You can imagine the hockey world up there, what they're going to say. Last year, the two best teams in hockey were in the same division, and of course they met in the second round in Nashville and Winnipeg. So we've had back-to-back years. In fact, didn't it even happen to Washington? Wasn't Washington and Pittsburgh the second-round matchup, and they were the two best teams
East? Oh, absolutely.
And when Washington won the President's Trophy and Pittsburgh had the second-best
record? Three straight years they've had.
And so we've had
second-round head-to-head.
Keep coming up where it's not the two best. It's the two best teams either in the league or in your conference, and you have to play in either the first or second round. And I agree with David. There is no perfect system because if you go back to 1-8, 2-7, then you get the inequities of travel, right? Like he said, you get a first-round matchup against Vancouver, and Chicago and St. Louis play each other, and they could bus to each other, And so there's a problem with that. There's a disadvantage on that front. So I don't know what the perfect answer is, or I don't know what the right answer is, but I'm just telling you, here we go again. They're going to bellyache after the first round. Somebody, either Boston or Toronto.
Definitely. Another one that's brewing right now is San Jose against Las Vegas. Las Vegas is on fire right now. They went into San Jose and won last night.
Yep.
That's a bear of a first-round matchup. But David Poile, I thought, gave us some good insight there. He said when Seattle comes into the league, basically, when the league goes to 32, it's probably going to be up for discussion again. He's been around long enough, circling back to 90s night. you know, we've watched the Predators. There have been a couple of realignments just since the Predators have been in. I can also remember a time when I was a kid and watching the New York Islanders. The Islanders played the Flyers in the finals of the Stanley Cup 1 year. The Rangers played the Montreal Canadiens in the final 1 year. So what they used to do is they put everybody in the same hat, regardless of East or West, and they had 1 versus 16, 2 versus 15, etc. Then they went to something similar to what we have now, is you had to work your way out of the division for a lot of years. Then they went with what we think might be the best way to go, just 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7. So they've done it a lot of different ways, but no matter what you do, there are going to be some people going, well, this isn't fair because, and he mentioned the big thing, there's such a drastic difference in the travel in the East versus the West. And so 1 versus 8, you do have some pretty extreme travel. Remember what happened a couple of years ago?
Of course.
When the Predators were a wild card. So
3 years ago.
They couldn't complain because they were a wild card, right? Wild card is you get thrown into the other bracket in the Pacific, and they were in the bracket with the two California teams.
They played 14 games in 2 rounds. It did more travel than anybody else the rest of the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Go back to 2011. The Predators beat the Anaheim Ducks in the first round, and then they had to play the Vancouver Canucks in the second round. There was some ridiculous traveling going on there. And that was in the 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, etc. So the travel in the West is the issue. You do eliminate some of it when you play within your division. In other words, you know, when you have a pod of at least 3 teams that are in the same time zone, the travel's not as bad. Same thing with the Central Division. Basically, everybody's in the Central time zone. In fact, is every team in the division in the Central, except for, I guess, Colorado's in the Mountain time. But for the most part, the travel is reasonable, at least in the first round and likely in the second round. But we'll have to wait and see. But you're right. With Toronto in town, it's been locked in for a second straight year now. It's going to be Toronto and Boston, a death match, 2 elite teams having to go head-to-head in the first round. No doubt.
The other part was Austin Watson. What's going to happen on that front? David Poile commented on it, and Peter Laviolette said downstairs that he hasn't even talked to Austin Watson yet. I saw some people quoting that on Twitter when he addressed the media after skate, and he said that right now he just can't answer it because they haven't formed a plan yet on what they're going to do. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And as I was discussing with Caleb before you joined us and David joined us, you know, okay, if at some point he goes back in, then it's a good problem to have, right? But who comes out? Because Rocco Grimaldi is I think you would say he's earned his playing time. So who's coming out of the lineup? Are you going to take Brian Boyle out? No. I mean, he's earned his time. Who are you going to take out of the lineup, right? I mean, that then it gets back to, okay, well, then what do you do? But like I said, that's a good problem to have when they have to cross that bridge.
Yeah, I would agree. That to me is down the road some. The first thing I thought of when I saw the news is I'm excited that Austin Watson, from a personal standpoint, has gotten to this stage, right? He's come out of this stage to become eligible again. And he deserves a lot of credit for that because he's done the things that he's had to do behind the scenes. And I don't even know what that is. But I know the second time around, it's not like they just send you off to some place and you come back and everything's fine. And I think we all have to realize that this is a process, right? It's an ongoing fight, as we talked about when he entered into stage 2, right? That when you're in recovery, you don't just get, quote, cured, right? You're constantly having to go through the process.
Every day.
And so I think we have to be careful not to get ahead of ourselves and start saying, well, you know, he could be back by this date or that date. Because
of course.
I think the right approach is what they're saying. It's a process. You know, he's just back here. He's back on the roster. At some point, he'll start skating with the team. But I think what's good is they're not desperate to get him back in there. It's not like he's the leading scorer and, man, we can't win without him. You can allow him at his own pace to progress. And I think always being conscious that, you know, let's not throw him back into an atmosphere where he could relapse, right? I think that's what everybody – and, you know, my wife Erin works at – you know, she worked at community high school for a long time. which was a school that was basically set up for kids coming out of the rehabilitation process. And part of the idea was, let's not throw them right back into the school where the environment was there that was conducive to falling into bad habits, right? So you have a school that's separate amongst peers that have gone through some of the same experiences, and you can gradually work your way back in. I think you have to be conscious of that,
right? I'm not a trained professional, and I don't pretend to be one, but, I mean, look, just from my experiences with this world that we're talking about, you can't – I mean, there's no such thing as kid gloves. I mean, either you're going to be able to make it or you're not. I mean, it's an everyday battle.
Right.
Like, when you say this environment, well, this is his – if he wants to be
absolutely
a part of it, either he can walk away and say, it's too much for me. Like, I can't make this work, and I need to go do something else in life to keep me on the, you know, on the right path, or he's going to be able to – handle this world, this professional sports hockey world.
Eventually, you have to be back and be able to function and be able to do your job. This is his profession, right? But I think I think we have to be careful not to start putting him in the lineup or when is he going to be in the lineup. I think it's just let it work itself.
But
everybody's going to have those questions.
Ask.
I understand.
Everybody's
got to
ask.
Absolutely.
You're not going to be able to just say, hey, we'll let you know when everything, you know, whenever we've come up with a plan. It's just not how it works.
Right.
You can't just release a statement and say, just let it die, you know, just let it go away till we tell you the next time to ask questions.
Well,
if you
go on to NHL.com, that is a lead story. One of the two or three lead stories is Austin Watson has been reinstated.
Yep.
And he's on if you pick up your stat sheet tonight as the media, he is on the roster for the Nashville Predators. So it's natural that people are going to have questions. But I'm just saying, let's show some patience. One of the things that they have said in their statement is it's all about Austin's from a personal standpoint, his family thing. So it's going to take a little time. But I really commend him for getting back to this stage, and that's exciting news.
We'll come back, wrap up the second hour of Darren and Donick next. I think Marquise hit this mark.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He missed on Three Doors Down, but that's okay.
That's okay.
He's been rolling. He's been hanging. And by the way, Kayla was listening.
I mean,
and she said absolutely she would have been singing again. By the way, she did sing earlier. She would have been singing again. What was that, Backstreet Boys?
That was Backstreet Boys, yeah. Is it possible that Three Doors Down, though, was at least formed in the 90s? Is that possible?
Late 90s, met each other?
See, that's where I was thinking. I was borderline on that one. I'm to blame for that one, but I was borderline. Let's say
I'm going to give you the
2000s.
Benefit of the doubt, Marquise.
I mean, thank you. I appreciate that. But I followed it up with some Deion Sanders here.
And now that you've said that, I want to look. Because, by the way, we're big fans of Three Doors Down. They're Nashvillians. They grew up in Mississippi, but they have been Nashvillians for a good while now. And I want to see exactly to your question when Brad Arnold and the boys were formed. No, they were formed in the 90s.
Perfect.
So there you go.
Okay.
There you go.
So we are 100% authentic.
So there you go, Marquise.
Thank you, Wikipedia, for saving
everything on Wikipedia
today
is legit.
WikiLeaks saved your bacon. We are going to find out a little bit more about Temple coming up to kick off the third hour. We're going to talk to their play-by-play man. Of course, Belmont and the Owls do battle this evening in Dayton. So we'll get into all that hot and heavy. We had a really good conversation with Jimmy Dykes in the first hour about the brackets and some of the SEC matchups, because I think there's some tricky ones out there. I've admitted that all my questions until the tournament starts, some of them will be very, very selfish purposes, because I'm trying to fill out a winning bracket, and I need to know who's going to win between Nevada and Florida. Who's going to win between Ole Miss and Oklahoma? Those are some tricky SEC matchups.
The 7-10s and the 8-9s, very tough calls.
Tough.
Very tough calls.
Tough, tough, tough.
Always.
Honestly, I'm not sure Mississippi State Liberty is easy.
Oh, well,
we
know.
I think that is a tricky matchup for Ben Howland.
Unless you are totally clueless, you know that going back 20 years, the 12 versus 5, a 12 almost always, not always, but almost every year at least 1-12 wins.
I will say this. It's gone. I've been looking at that. It used to be a bigger thing.
Yeah.
It hasn't been as
not
much
as much.
Here
there
lately.
Was 1 year with I think at least three.
Oh, yeah.
If not all yes. 4-12s 1 year, if my memory serves.
It was the thing, right? It was the sexy pick, but it's not as much these days. So the 5-12s haven't been happening as much.
Yeah. There have been times where it's a 1 point spread, you know, for a 12 and a 5. So,
well, is it Wisconsin and Oregon?
Yeah, it's 1.5 points.
1.5?
Yeah. Oregon's on fire. I watched it. I was out in California, so I watched Oregon play the semifinal against Arizona State, who I still don't think should be in the tournament. I was biased for the little guys, I guess. I was looking for any way that Lipscomb and Belmont could both get in there, but so I kind of had clouded view. And, of course, there was Bill Walton doing the game. But Oregon has got some talent. And so they've been off the grid almost the whole year. Nobody talked about it because they weren't even on the bubble. They had to win the tournament. But they did make a nice run to get through there. And Wisconsin has the one great player. He's a Wooden Award guy. Yep. He's been around forever.
Yep.
And so he can dominate a game.
I just think there are some intriguing – that is going to be one. By the way, I don't think it'll be a big surprise if people take Oregon in that one as the 12 seed. There's some interesting games when you think of, you know, is Kansas Northeastern, is that tricky? Kansas is not your normal Kansas Jayhawks team. Does that mean they can't get on a run? No. But they are not the same team we've seen in the past. They're not, in my opinion, a legitimate contender. They're a four seed, yes. But would I be blown away if they were beaten by Northeastern? No, I wouldn't be blown away.
Not at all. What do we know about Kansas? They didn't win the regular season crown for the first time in a long, long time in the Big 12. They were very beatable. They got beat in the Big 12 tournament. They have some good wins, but it clearly is a notch below. The other thing that you hear whispers about is what's going on behind the scenes at Kansas. Maybe the pieces don't fit. Like a lot of the top programs, they have a lot of turnover in their roster. And to me, it's just hard to expect that every single Kansas team is going to be a powerhouse when you turn that many players over. Same thing with North Carolina or Kentucky or even Duke. It doesn't all come together every year. And clearly Kansas has had to deal with some of that. They're not quite superior in talent like they have been almost every year. So they're gettable. I think that's absolutely something that could happen.
Here's another sexy pick. Tell me what you think as we wrap up this hour. Out in San Jose, we already talked about the Badgers and the Ducks. That's in San Jose. The other one is Kansas State, UC Irvine. A lot of people are picking UC Irvine as kind of the pick.
Yeah,
30 to upset win Kansas State. What do you think of that?
Well, Kansas State, I don't know. I'm not up on the household names.
Well, they made the magical run last year
to the
Elite Eight?
Yeah, well, they beat Kentucky, right,
in
a great game in the Sweet 16. And they have a lot of those guys back. Now, who is the kid? What's his – I'll look it up here in a second. But they have a guy that's been in and out of the lineup all year long. Probably their best player. They have very good players outside of
him. Is it Wade?
I'm going to look it up here. Why did I just hit Kansas and not Kansas State on my thing? What am I doing? Kansas State. He wears number his name is Dean Wade.
Wade. That's what I
said.
Yeah,
Dean Wade. You got it. Not Dwayne Wade.
No.
Dean Wade. So he has missed 8 games. He was injured. You know, he's always seems to be dealing with something. When he's in there, he is a difference maker. Now, they have Barry Brown. He's a great player. He's the guy. I think he's the guy that made the big play.
But they haven't officially said if Wade is playing or not, correct?
Yes, it's very iffy.
So it's 50-50.
They're trying to be secretive about what the deal is. So that's what a lot of people are looking at. The other one –
And that would be the key. If we knew that would change everything.
Well, what about John Morant, too, in Murray State as a 12 seed?
Yep.
I can just tell you right now, I'm picking Murray State.
Okay.
Marquette is really slumped down the stretch. Really slumped.
We'll learn a little bit more about Belmont's opponent tonight. Harry Donahue is the play-by-play man. We'll talk to him to kick off the third hour of Darren and Donick next.